Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn about curcumin and apoptosis. That's the programmed cell death in colon cancer cells. Big deal. A lot of people have colorectal cancer, and this is a way to help them. All in about 15 other studies today, we're going to be taking your calls. And if you've got a question, you can call our voicemail. And that voicemail is at 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805, and leave your question. I'll be happy to address it. I don't know how many I'll get to. It depends upon the question you're asking and how much time it takes to properly answer it. For those of you who would like to download our shows, and about 97 to 98% of people actually listen to this program in the evening, and we have a profile. The last profile I have is that the average listener to my radio show is a 37-year-old female, college-educated, listening from home. That's interesting. We have a lot of males listening, but they finally got us a who are the listeners. So we have a very young audience, and I'm happy about that, and they're sharing the information. The archive number, write it down, please, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And if you're just anywhere out and about and you're traveling, you're on vacation, but you want to listen to this program live over any portable listening device, just call this number, 641-793-7091, 641-793-7091. I have a couple very important reports to share. I'm hopeful to get to one, including what I would consider a new Green Deal that's doable. The one that has been suggested, idealistic as it may be, is completely impractical. Politically, it's non-startable. No matter how people posture behind it to try to get your votes to make you believe they're interested in the environment, none of these people have a history of doing anything for the environment. We'll show you what you can do without the government, the federal or the state government, by your own initiatives. So that's our program today. We have a lot to share. From the Institute of Sciences in India comes a study about curcumin. And curcumin is the active ingredient in turmeric. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Research, and it showed that this compound can induce programmed cell death in colon cancer cells. Now, we know that curcumin is a polyphenol. We know that it's extremely powerful in its anti-cancer and anti-inflammatory properties. There are thousands of studies on curcumin and turmeric. They're all good. So I'm suggesting you just include more of it in your life. Also from the Institute, Illinois Institute of Technology, comes a new study published in a peer-reviewed journal Obesity, and it talks about what to do to help people with their blood sugar who are pre-diabetic. And we're talking about, all told, it is estimated that we have 84 million adults who are pre-diabetic. And that's a tremendous amount of the American population. That's 34% of American adults, according to the CDC. So the study found that something as simple as red raspberries in the diet of individuals with prediabetes and insulin resistance can help them. And this was a randomized controlled acute study, and it showed that when you have raspberries, and I'm suggesting a cup of raspberries, and on three separate days, they found that it was better on your blood sugar. That's good. So why not just put raspberries and blackberries, pomegranates into a smoothie in the morning? That would be even better. From the University of New Mexico comes a study that found that THC found more important for therapeutic effects in cannabis than originally thought. So researchers at the University of New Mexico recently solved a major gap in scientific literature by using mobile software technology to measure the real-time effects of actual cannabis-based products used by millions of people every day. And contrary to popular media reports and scientific dogma, the psychoactive chemical, THC, showed the strongest correlation with therapeutic relief and far less evidence for the benefits of relying on more socially acceptable chemical known as CBD, the cannabinoid. So the study was entitled The Association Between Cannabis Product Characteristics and Symptom Relief, published in the journal Scientific Reports. So all along, they've been underestimating the benefit, the health benefit, the medical benefit of the original THC and making it more, let's say, socially acceptable, politically acceptable, the CBD. And that's because it contains a chemical that's acceptable called cannabidiol, and instead of the THC, which is a different chemical. That's a tetrahydrocannabinol. Also today, being surrounded by green space in childhood can improve mental health when you become an adult. From Aarhus University in Denmark, quite simply, children who grew up with trees and water and lakes have up to 55% less risk of developing various mental disorders later in life. So it calls for more greener and healthier cities of the future. Well, how about doing this? Why don't we take all of our playgrounds and turn them into, let's say, a more hospitable habitat and get the children involved with the teachers to build all kinds of interesting habitats so the kids can get out at recess twice a day and play for 10 minutes. They don't have recess anymore. So it's important that kids get out, and especially in the daytime, and play. A very interesting study from New York University, and it's all about life's transitions. And I was thinking about this because one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing is helping people better understand the consequences, the intended and unintended consequences of when you make the best or less than the best decisions in life. And this study shows that life transitions are easier if you have a sense of well-rounded ending. What does that mean? Well, I'll put it simply. How many times would you have left a relationship that was not an ideal relationship for you if you knew that you would have nothing more in the way of regret or guilt or shame or fear from that relationship, so you were free to begin another relationship that would hopefully be more rewarding and more in alignment and harmonizing with who you are and your needs? Let's say that you were leaving a job, but you wouldn't leave because the economic security was the anchor that kept you there. Now, could you imagine if you knew you had another job so you could leave that job? Then that would be an easier, what we call, well-rounded ending. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a place for people to go who choose not to fight any longer against the diseases ravaging their body and mind? But at least it would be hospitable, and it would be wholesome, and it would be tranquil, and you would not feel as if you're just sitting in a bed in a hospice being probed and checked and given opiates until you die. There was a scene near the end of Soylent Green. Boy, would that be a good movie today. And with Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson. Edward G. Robinson, I believe his character was called Book, meaning he was so knowledgeable because he was old enough when people still read books and they still printed books to know things. And at the end, when he was ready to die, like thousands of others, he went to this center and they went in and you got to select what kind of ending you wanted. And he wanted something, a pastoral, a bucolic, with animals that were no longer, they had all gone extinct. None of them were any longer alive. So he drank this liquid, he put on this gown, went in and laid on this table, and then this complete circle screen lit up of all these beautiful sounds and sights of nature and deers and birds soaring and waterfalls. It was pristine, pure. And he got to watch this for several minutes, and then he died. And then the table tipped, his body went in, he became other people's food, Soylent Green. But imagine that you could go to a place and actually, if you chose to, how about this? If you chose to say, maybe I could do something different, will do something different, and you had a support team to help you get back your life. Now, that's happened several times. There's a person possibly listening right now down in Atlanta. And 2 years ago, he came to a retreat. He was supposed to have gone into hospice care on that Monday. Instead, on a Sunday, he flew in to be a part of a group. And he had two end-stage diseases, both terminal, leukemia and COPD, and an extreme complication from chronic bronchitis. His two brothers had died of COPD, and his father had died of leukemia, and he had helped them all through hospice care. And he said, just at the last moment, I decided I just didn't want to do that. Well, today he's alive and well. Twice in the last year, he's completed two marathons. One was an ultramarathon. It was close to a 50K, full of vigor and energy. His pulmonologist could find no obstruction. He went to another pulmonologist, no obstruction. He reversed these diseases. Now, look at the difference. These are real stories with real people and real medical records and blood tests and 80,000 drop in his white blood cell count in 2 weeks. No medicine in history has ever done that. And instead of anyone saying, wow, how this happened, they just said, that's an interesting outcome. Yeah. Now, imagine if you had a place where a lot of people could go and change their life so they didn't go quietly into that dark sleep. So that's something we should think on. That would then change the energy. So according to this New York University study, the transitioning in life from one stage of life to the next, if we knew that there could be a well-rounded ending or closure or sense of closure, that could give us positive feelings about the change. How can you move to the country if you're fearful of giving up the culture and the frenetic energy and the intellectual discourse you have in the city? Some people thrive on that. I actually have had friends that never left the Upper West Side. I mean, they just lived on the Upper West Side. I knew people that used to hang out at the New Yorker bookstore, a famous Marxist, communist, socialist writings, a good variety. And they would sit and debate and have arguments all night long. Now, I lived down the street on 89th. I lived one block away. Little tiny apartment, 400 square feet. And I would spend evenings up there after my daughter had gone to sleep. I'd walk up there and sit, listen, talk, read. You didn't have to buy anything. I don't think anybody ever bought a book there. These old ratty couches everyone hang out on. But people didn't want to move from there because they had no idea what would happen if they moved to another place. So we're very hesitant to make change because we don't know about the well-rounded ending. So I think we should spend some time considering how we could bring closure to where we're at in a passage so we free ourselves for the next passage of life. From Lund University, which is in Sweden, a substance in the ambrosia plant found to inhibit cancer stem cells. That's good. That was... they have found the weapon against cancer. It's based on a simple plant, the ambrosia plant. And that was published in a peer-reviewed journal. And hopefully now more information will come out on it when it does. And when it's available, I'll let you know. And finally, understanding societal longitudinal study from the United Kingdom published in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. Listen carefully, long working hours linked to heightened depression and risk in women. If you work longer than 55 hours a week, you really increase your risk of depression. And it increases depression in both sexes. Well, own a business and see how 55 hours seems like a short work week. I believe that it depends upon the work you're doing and what other things you're doing in your life to balance your life. If you had balance and you had joy, then I don't believe it would have the same outcome. We're going to take a break and come right back to your questions. I look forward to them, and you'll hear my answer in just a moment.
Gary, this is Max. Thank you for the service that you offer us to leave messages on an answering machine and for you answering these messages. Here's this question. It has to do with Twitter and free speech. Someone recently that I came across tweeted that this Jesse Smollett character was an, but this was on a Twitter, and he was immediately thrown off of Twitter. His Twitter account was gone. They wouldn't give it back to him. So I began to think we have to have a free press, and this isn't allowed by the Constitution with a free press in the First Amendment. But then again, someone can argue, well, this doesn't have to do with the press. This is a private business organization, and we have the right to censor anyone we wish. And then I thought, well, so is AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile. But what if I use that word as I'm speaking to a friend of mine that so-and-so is a, does that mean my service should be cut because they're not the press? Should T-Mobile shut me off? Or Verizon shut me, take away my account because I use that word? I don't think so. And if I'm right, please let us know how we can fight against something like this, who we should call. Thank you very much. And again, thank you for the service. So long.
I would answer you in two ways. First, with a concept of philosophy. In particular, I like Sophocles, and he said, it is terrible to speak well and be wrong. Think of all the statements made by the Clintons. I posted a page from a newspaper showing that prisons were going to sue the states if the number of beds that were occupied, or cells, fell below a certain number. And one of the people commented that this was under Bill Clinton. Of course it was under the Clintons. Both Hillary and Bill supported the private prison system and always have. But it was also under Bush, and it was also under Obama. Whoever was willing to pay through PAC groups to keep them in office, but let them now give us their rhetoric and the wonderful flow of words that glide off their tongues. These people are as slick as eels going through Vaseline. But then measure what they say, and then look for the truth, and you'll find there is no truth. We need to destroy Gaddafi and the state of Libya in order to protect its people from Gaddafi. But Gaddafi had created the greatest state in Africa. It was the Paris of Africa. 54 countries in Africa. It had no debt. It had tens of billions of dollars in gold and silver. Every person was well-to-do. There was no jail for poverty, no interest. Everybody shared in the wealth of the country. He wasn't even in power the last 4 years. Local citizens' committees were. Highest literacy rate in Africa, the most freedom of any Muslim country for women, and yet he became a threat. Now, mind you, not just an existential threat, a direct, immediate threat, but it was all lies. So go back to what Seneca said, and listen again, because I want you to understand the meaning of this. Not Seneca. Sophocles says, it is terrible to speak well and be wrong. So what we have done in our society, we have people speaking well, but they're wrong. MSNBC, CNN, these are articulate people. Even Tucker Carlson, some things he says, he's right on about. Many things he said, he is completely wrong. The difference is when he's interviewing someone who agrees with him, you'll notice that the person's allowed to speak uninterrupted. The moment someone who has a counterbalancing argument to Tucker speaks, he interrupts like a four-year-old child and doesn't stop and then has a very condescending attitude. But that's who he is. And at least he's not as radically wrong all the time as other people in the media. So think of what we're drawn to. We're drawn to people's charm and whether they look presidential. But what if they're not presidential? What if they had none of the merits and manners, intellect and insights, temperament to be a leader? That's okay. We never voted for anyone because of that to begin with. Last person who had all that going for them, not perfect, but probably was the second best president that we've had in the last 100 years was Dwight Eisenhower. At least he told the truth. For those of us now looking at his words, they're extremely salient. By the way, it was Seneca who said, whatever is well said by another is mine. And think of how many times people have taken the credit for other people's insights and work and used their forums and in effect intellectually plagiarized them a lot. So now get to the issue. You have not heard me mention anything whatsoever, not a sentence about the claims originally made, the media coverage, and now the counterclaims against the actor, because I believe in due process. I'll wait until the verdict is done, then I will share my thoughts, not before. Because I've seen too many times where people have been claimed that they have raped people, only to find out that it didn't happen. Right now, a woman was just convicted but not given jail time for saying that two black guys raped her. They would have gone to jail for probably the rest of their life. She didn't get any jail time. That's an injustice. Do you have any idea how many African-American or men of color are in jail for crimes they didn't commit, including sexual crimes they didn't commit? We have a very good idea, about 40%. So who cries for the innocent who have no voice? And the people who do have a voice never stop speaking it. They never shut up. And I would suggest that Cortez learn a few lessons about growing up at 29. And based upon her background, I believe she graduated from Boston University, University of Massachusetts, I'm not sure which. I haven't looked. I was just told that. I would suggest that instead of giving us 15 more ideas a day, and that she take some time and measure her words, measure the power of words and what they mean, because even with the best of intention to educate us about the environment, she's speaking as if we are now supposed to follow her. It was Oliver Wendell Holmes who said, speak clearly if you speak at all. Carve every word before you let it fall. And all we hear now is just non-stop verbiage, but without substance, context, and truth. Now, when this gentleman who is now being accused of staging his own crime, remember, he did not have an abridgment or censorship of his First Amendment rights. He was everywhere on national television, on the morning shows, extended interviews. He had a chance to make his case, and he did. And he did a very good job of it, because immediately Al Sharpton and everyone else came to his defense and said, this is just another example of institutional racism, and everyone played on that. Now watch how they try to walk it back. Now, was he telling the truth then, or is the district attorney and the grand jury, are they telling the truth now that he set it all up? the trial, the aftermath of the trial, the appeals process, the evidence presented, will provide a more clear and accurate example of this. Until such time that he is acquitted or found guilty, until such time that he acknowledges what he did was a setup or challenges it with his last breath until he's incarcerated or set free, we don't know the full truth. So he was not censored. Now, if people want to back away from what he said, that's their right. Or if they want to embrace him, some people are still embracing him. I will not become involved. You will not hear me mention a thing about this until this is adjudicated. But I appreciate your call. This has nothing to do with censorship. We'll take one more.
Hi, this is for Gary. I don't know if you're going to want to play this over the air, but I had an experience with a couple who looked him up on Wikipedia. We walk our dogs at the Rose Bowl around the loop that goes around the outside of it, and this is where we met them. And one of them said to my girlfriend, must have said something about having a high blood pressure problem, and my girlfriend said, oh, talk to him because he knows a lot about health. Of course, how can you listen to Gary Null for 20 years and not know about health, right? Anyway, and so she asked me about it, so I looked into it. And within a week, you read a study about high blood pressure, and you talked about it. And so next time we ran into them, I told her about it. And actually, it was that night that we ran into them, because I was showing her how she could listen to the show on her cell phone by dialing up the archive. So, all right, I told them about that, and then the next time we saw them, they said, instead of listening to that, they looked up Gary Null on Wikipedia, and found out that he's quack, and told me that I was in a cult, and that was about it. So, about a month later, I was listening to a summit over the internet about brain health, reversing Alzheimer's and that sort of thing. And so I thought, oh, this would be something good to tell them about. So I was telling one of them about it, and she didn't want to hear anything about it. And I said, why not? Aren't you concerned about your brain? Don't you know someone in your family? Anyways, she ended up walking away from me, and I didn't understand. And then about a week later, I realized it went back to the Wikipedia thing and the fact that I'm in a Gary Null cult, and she really wasn't going to hear anything I had to say about health. So I just wanted to pass that on to you because it falls right in line with what you're talking about. I know you've heard this a lot, but I just felt compelled to call you up and let you know about it. And I just want to thank you again for your show and everything that you have brought to the whole world. And thanks again.
Okay. That's a rather common a very common theme. I've been dealing with this virtually my entire adult career. And until recently, I chose just to continue walking forward and let the slings and arrows be what they are. But I also began to see that other people who do not have the same forum, nor the same background, nor the same viewership, listenership, readership. They haven't sold, I was told, 47 million books. They don't have 100 million downloads. They're not packing venues. So then what right do I have not to face these critics when so many other people are being really destroyed? Rupert Sheldrake, Deepak Chopra, Sharon Atkinson, and dozens of others. And that's when I began to do the research on Wikipedia. The biggest claim against me is that I'm a quack because I'm an AIDS denier. That was started by one person. I know that person. And he's not a nice person. And that's because I refuse to accept that AZT should be the drug of choice treating people with AIDS. I was right. He was wrong. We have long-term survivors using natural techniques to treat their HIV or AIDS conditions, and there are over 300,000 Americans who died because they took the 1,600 milligrams of AZT per day. Any doctor giving that today would lose their license and go to jail. But no one apologizes when they make a mistake as long as they have the virtue of the moniker of official reason behind them, the AIDS community. It's an $800 billion industry. More money is made through AIDS than heart disease, cancer, and diabetes combined. Here is the issue. I invited everyone within the AIDS community to come to the Tri-State Healing Center to see the success we were having. I worked with over 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS and HIV infection. They had all their medical records. Our medical staff and nurses were given protocols. These people were worked on for an average of 16 months. Not a single person died during that period of time. And eight of them that went on a more extensive protocol, which was 6 days a week for 4 hours a day, 24 hours a week, we gave them different treatments. And they all reversed HIV. They went HIV negative. Their white cells increased. All of their symptoms increased of health. They were vital. They had energy. They had no Kaposi's sarcoma, no cystic pneumonia. And word got out through a person who was interested in the subject of AIDS. His name was Doug Henderson, African-American attorney. He was friends with Arthur Ashe. Arthur came by because he was diagnosed with AIDS also. And he spent hours upon hours talking with these people. He turned out and spoke with Bill Tatum, the publisher of the Amsterdam News, a very important African-American publication. And then someone I knew, Stokely Carmichael, started spreading the word within the community. And before you knew it, we were getting a lot of media coverage within the African-American community. I wrote the first article that said that HIV and AIDS is not a caused by African-Americans, because that's who they were trying to pin it on at the time. They love scapegoating. And in any case, we had 8 long-term survivors who completely reversed. They appeared on Tony Brown's Journal on PBS and seen by millions of people. We held a press conference. It took a year for the press conference to occur because we wanted to get 100 people who had long-term survival not using AZT. Their medical doctors, their patient records, all were in New York. The former governor of New York was there, David Patterson. A whole panel of scientists were there who'd reviewed these people's charts and records. Not a single member of the media came, but 7,000 people were invited, including from the AIDS community. And yet probably 99% of the people in that room were gay, the victims, telling their stories of how they overcame this scourge. The longest article ever published in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients was, and by the way, the press conference is called AIDS is Not a Death Sentence, and the article was published in the Townsend Letter on 3 separate ways of treating AIDS naturally with good results with patient records. A dozen other articles published, 5 documentaries produced, award-winning documentaries, and a textbook written with Professor Jim Feast on AIDS, a Second Opinion. So, on the one hand, I've cured more people than any person in the history of the world on AIDS. That's a fact. I have treated over 1,200 people and never charged them a penny. I paid for it out of my own pocket. It was free to them, not to me. Those doctors got their salaries, and all the vitamin C drips and everything else had to be paid for. So on the one hand, it's you have to live for more than the acceptance by the community of what you do. You have to do things because of a deep spiritual connection. So on the one hand, you're being attacked by members of a community that you've gotten results that no one else in that community has gotten. You haven't killed people and caused their death by insisting they go on these harsh drugs. They have. So there's the paradox involved in all this. In any case, they continue to spread that as if that would be a career ender for me. It wasn't. And I've been thriving ever since. But for the persons that you're talking about, like someone who doesn't know me has no background on me, then they wouldn't know anything about me. And therefore, it's understandable that if they read something on Wikipedia and believe Wikipedia, then they would think I'm a quack and that you're a member of a cult. And that's how they want it to be. That's how the people who do this. So I want you to do this. Before you try to tell people about me, go to GaryNall.com or go to PRN.fm and you'll see 18 articles, 18, that we've written deconstructing everything about Wikipedia and the people behind these slings and arrows and these defamations and these libels and slanders. We call them out, we name them, we show what they're saying and how what they're saying is wrong. 18 articles, including you can see our point-for-point rebuttal of every single thing said about me on Wikipedia and how it's wrong. And we prove it. But Wikipedia does not care about the truth. And as a result, the moment we have had dozens of people try to make changes, they immediately revert it back. So this is not about an encyclopedia we should trust without question. This is about the reality of the politics of medicine and science. If you're the most visible, longest-lasting voice in the world of health and nutrition, that's what I am, like it or not, then I'm their number one target. Who has the number one progressive radio program in the world? This is it. You're listening to it. Who's published more articles to help people? This is it. More books? This is it. More documentaries? This is it. Led more rallies against social injustice? Right here. So, they're unaware of the tenacity of people who've had the benefit from that information. So don't try to convince anyone that there's a better way of doing something unless they ask you, is there a better way? And before you tell them what that way is, let them know the biases, the prejudice, the political attacks that they're going to see, because if they destroy the messenger, me, then they don't have to change their life. They can continue eating, drinking, and living the way that produced their diseases. My message is not one that's to be spoon-fed to anyone. My message is not to convince people to change their life. I'm merely here to be the person that helps people make a transition when they're ready. Wikipedia is using all of its force, all of its resources, hundreds of millions of visits on a weekly basis to try to discourage people through denigration, slander, and libel. Will they ever be held accountable? You bet. Are we lawyering up? Oh, we just hired more lawyers. But I'm not going to tell you what's going to be the next act. I can tell you there'll be over 80 more articles coming in the next 12 months challenging Wikipedia, showing its discrepancy, showing how it doesn't obey its own rules, showing how a small group within it, embedded within it, and its leader, Jimmy Wales, have been engaging in these scurrilous attacks to denigrate and create disinformation. And today they win. But that's only today. And if you wonder about the quality of my information, remember, PBS doesn't allow programs on that they have not been vetted. And Bob Marty, the executive producer of the most successful hit up to that point in PBS history, How to Live Forever, had to have over 20 experts vet my program, and they did. Whether they like me or not is irrelevant. The question is the information Gary's showing accurate? Is it based upon consensus science? The answer was yes. I've never had to retract a sentence of anything I've written in my life. We spent over 5,000 hours vetting every sentence in the textbook I wrote on AIDS, A Second Opinion. They even brought in a professor, James Feast, who was there to make sure every sentence was backed up by proof. But in America, the truth and proof are secondary to who holds power, who holds the public forum. And up to this point, they have. But that's fine. We will continue challenging injustice, presenting the truth without animus, without anger, without rage, and this way that we do it. Okay? That's all the time we have for today. In fact, I've gone about 22 minutes in answering these two issues. Tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour, The topic is American interventionism, how the U.S. interferes in the outcomes of elections and is promoting regime change around the world. My guest is Professor Dan Kovalik, a human rights and attorney and peace activist and professor of international human rights. It'll be a wonderful hour. You won't want to miss it. We're going to take a break and come back. We'll be sharing a lot more with you. Please stay with us. But what I'm going to do is I'm not going to have a chance today, but tomorrow I will do how to make a new Green Deal that actually works, doesn't cost us, you know, all this money, and is not going to be gridlocked with political infighting. That, and we'll post the article too. We'll post the article later today. But that's what we're up to. But I'm going to now play you to end the program in a little background. They were going to pass a law in New York State mandating that every health professional have four shots. All four contain mercury, 24 micrograms, and nurses, doctors, everybody in the hospital. And they weren't going to vote on it. There were no debates, no hearings. So I gathered 1,200 people from this audience in 24 hours. We went up and marched onto the steps of the Capitol in Albany. And I met with the top healthcare commissioners for the state and a group of doctors. They then decided to hold hearings. Yeah, they should have done it before. And the way a hearing works is when you sign up, your position in signing up is where you'll be asked to testify. I was first there. I was there an hour before anyone else. I signed up at 8 o'clock in the morning. I was the very last person they asked to testify. The media had all gone. Everyone was gone. There was, and I didn't even notice there was one person in the corner who was left. So I went over to testify, and he filmed it. This is the entire film, which is, I think, 22 minutes. We only have time for 10 of it now, but this will give you an idea of what I was sharing with these people.
I'm going to try to bring four separate pieces of the puzzle together. Some of it may include some of what you've already heard, but I know for a fact much of it is different. There's an old Jewish saying, a half-truth is a full lie. I begin my discussion by asking two basic questions. Are vaccines safe? If so, what is the proof? Are vaccines effective? If so, what is the proof? I am not talking about all vaccines, though this applies to all vaccines specifically on what we're dealing with. I have reviewed the scientific literature extensively. I've spent the last 7.5 years with thousands of hours of research on the subject of autism and what connections they may have to environmental factors, including vaccines. Not just the thimerosal in vaccines, but the other ingredients as well. I produced an award-winning documentary called Autism Made in USA. I produced a separate documentary called Vaccine Nation, representing all sides. All of it, the primary sponsor in the United States, vaccines in general, is in there and has his say. I then did something that I thought had been done, and I was surprised when I realized it had not. When I began to review what amounted to thousands of peer-reviewed literature studies on vaccines, I found that I could find no convincing evidence that any vaccine at all had long-term, double-blind, placebo-controlled study trials, and even when they said, when the evidence I did examine, that the CDC and the FDA and other organizations were using as, oh, of course they're studies, and they showed the studies, they would say, well, this is a study, and then I would find that, well, you left out the virus part of the vaccine, but you included all the other ingredients, including thimerosal and mercury and formaldehyde, etc. Well, that's not a placebo. And in good science, you don't use that as a placebo. I also saw that virtually all the studies that were supporting the vaccines were done by the vaccine manufacturers. And since the FDA does not do independent studies on the creation, safety, and efficacy of vaccines, but rather relies upon the information from the vaccine manufacturers, and there's a very close relationship, I then took a very careful look at this relationship and found that more than 50% of people sitting on the FDA and the CDC's vaccine advisory program were from vaccine manufacturers. I felt this was a gross conflict of interest. The rationale was given that there are not enough experts who are independent to sit on these committees. Now, I thought that's absurd. There are more than 3 million outstanding scientists in the United States. Don't tell me you can't find 15 who have no industry affiliation to sit on a vaccine scheduling committee. I then took a careful look, and here's what I found. And this is where you have to bring the pieces together or you lose sight. We're too close, too narrow on this issue. First, when a child is given a vaccine, adults given a vaccine, a senior citizen is given a vaccine, rarely, if ever, has anyone done any study that I can find, and I'm open to the fact I may not have found one that was done, but I looked at thousands, where they looked at combinations of vaccine used in the given individual to see what short and long-term impact it might have had. Now, the panel before said that only 2% of vaccine adverse reactions are reported. The highest number I could find was the FDA's 10%. When you consider that $1.3 billion has been given out in vaccine damage, and you consider that the criteria for receiving that award is based upon getting the proof that your vaccine injury occurred in a very narrow frame of time, and then you look at the epidemiological evidence, you talk with immunologists, you talk with people, and every specialty of medicine, they will tell you many people will have a delayed reaction to a vaccine. It might be a month, 6 months, a year, even 2 years. For 18 years, sir, I have been trying to help the Gulf War veterans in the United States do something that I'm appalled to say that our own federal agencies has failed to do, including Bush Sr., Clinton, and Bush Jr. administrations. Acknowledge that 400,000 GIs who are sick with Gulf War syndrome actually have something other than post-traumatic stress disorder. I've done 3 award-winning documentaries on their plight. I've interviewed over 1,000 of them. I've interviewed people who have massive body lesions, who have rare and exotic diseases, who have brain and neurological disorders, having nothing to do with post-traumatic, didn't even go to the Gulf Theater. They got the vaccines, the experimental anthrax vaccine, the experimental botulism vaccine, that the FDA, similar to what it's doing with swine flu, gave a pass, an exemption on long-term studies. Those Americans, those brave, courageous Americans, over 33,000 are reported dead. Their statistics appear nowhere, only by those who are Gulf War veterans putting together their own figures. They have gone to Washington. I've gone to Washington to interview Chris Todd. I've gone to Washington to interview the people in the presence of the Gulf War vet, a man who got out of bed in the morning, had to crawl to get to his daughter because his legs were swollen the size of a football. A woman who had no illnesses, 22 years old, was in the Gulf, but got the vaccines, and now couldn't walk in bed 16, 18 hours a day. The government has refused to acknowledge that Gulf War syndrome is legitimate. To this day. Now, I've read the hearings, and I saw all of those white coat phenomena, the scientists and physicians that we bow down to, marching in and giving testimony. I had every word they said at every committee hearing. Rockefeller Committee, all of them, and they all were in gross denial. Whose interests were they serving? Certainly not the sick Gulf vets. And you would see the Gulf West determined to get their story out. No one listening. No one has looked at the facts. There are 44 separate studies, 44 today, that showed the Gulf War syndrome is real and that it was due to what they were exposed to. These are real diseases for a decade, and more, they said there's no diseases. Now, I'm wanting to ask, you're willing to inject pregnant women in this state or fire them if they don't take the vaccine. Are you or any member here, anyone, is the governor, is anyone in the state going to be held personally and legally responsible if that developing fetus gets that mercury into their brain and ends up with a learning disability, with autism, with any one of the autism spectrum disorders, or ends up with some form of intellectual deficit? We have an epidemic. I did another award-winning documentary called The Drugging of Our Children. Appalling to know that when you were going to school, when I was going to school, no kid got drugged. Today, 10 million American children don't go to school before they get a class 2 drug, the same class as cocaine. Do we actually have a new epidemic that didn't happen to any generation in American history, anywhere else in the world, but suddenly happened in the last 25 years to the newest generation? They have a brain chemical imbalance? No. And yet the so-called experts, the very experts that you would rely upon, are saying, well, must be something wrong. That's why we're giving them the drugs must work. And I say, no. The number one cause of death in the United States in 10 to 14-year-old boys is suicide. How many kids committed suicide when you were going to school, sir? None when I went to school, and I went to the largest high school in my state, 5,500 students, Park Creek High School. So what do we have? A whole new generation of people where autism is suddenly showing its head but never before? If autism were historically there, then everyone in their 50s, 60s, and 70s would start representing, at least percentage-wise, population autism in adults. We don't see it. It doesn't exist. And yet we refuse to acknowledge that what they're getting early in life could be contributing to it. So I'm saying, I am not willing to step by quietly and allow women who've been used and abused by the medical authorities, the very same medical doctors who have sit here with great certainty and enormous hubris and contempt for women, say, your body is our concern, your developing fetus is in our best interest to make sure it's born healthy, and yet give them mercury. You ask that same doctor, would you give that woman lead? Would you give anyone in this room lead? If you did, you would go to jail. So you're going to give something more toxic than lead to every one of these pregnant women? Sir, I'm appalled and I'm offended in the extreme, and I will not contain my concern, because these same women that we're so-called interested in, for the last 35 years, I've been one of the leading people advocating against synthetic hormone replacement therapy. We know now it causes breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart attacks, dementia, and stroke. 10% minimum, 13% more likely. You're talking about 10 million women. That's 1.3 million women we're allowing to be sacrificed on the altar of ignorance or greed or hubris. My mother died of a heart attack in the middle of the night, and she was taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy. Now, another part of this scenario is the number one cause of death in the United States is American medicine. I did a report that has not been refuted with five other MD board certified and PhDs called Death by Medicine. I was intrigued when the American Medical Association said that the number three or four cause of death in the United States was iatrogenesis.
Okay, it's double the length. You can listen to the entire one, but as you see, I do not. There's a whole group of physicians and the top people in the state that are listening to what I have to say. Now you know why they made me last and why the media was not there to hear what I had to say. And I'm just getting into the vaccines and showing the toxicology and the fact that no vaccine's ever been shown to be safe by a legitimate standard. So yeah, now you have a better idea why they fear me and why they have to destroy my reputation and why they want to make sure that I'm shown as a quack. But look at all my articles, over 800. Look at all my books, over 100. Look at all my documentaries, over 100. Look at over 28,000 broadcasts, over 5,000 lectures, over 122 demonstrations. Show me where I've made an error. You can't, but I can show you that almost everything they say every day from the medical industrial complex is just nothing but distortions, half-truths, and full lies. Yeah, I guess if I were in their shoes, I wouldn't want me around and speaking and have any credibility. The last thing you want to know is if someone's the holder of truth, then what the hell are you holding? Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Hello, baby. How have you been? You sure look good.